And you're listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran, and I am here with my co-host, Ron.
Good morning, Fran.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
I'm a little chilly,
good.
Though. It's kind of chilly outside.
Yeah, they said we're going to have an Arctic blast for a couple of days. And for the next little while, we're going to have some cold weather. It might creep up a little bit on Saturday, but I hear that there's some rain coming. And then get a little chilly with icy stuff on Sunday.
Oh, it's the blowing wind that bothers me more than anything else.
Oh, my goodness.
Really windy.
A lot of that up here on campus.
Yeah, somehow we sit up on top of the giant hill here.
And when I open my door to my car door, it almost got...
Did it grab it?
Yeah, I almost couldn't open it. It was pushing against it. It was very interesting.
Be careful. You could get a sports injury from that.
I know, and no one would want that.
No.
So big shout out to my friend Rob, who I asked to listen to us, and hopefully he's down there in Salem, and he's got us on. So shout out. Good morning. Holla. Hope you're doing well. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, before I get into talking about what Ron just said, is that... this weekend is the Vernon Holistic Health Fest.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
Yes, it's the Vernon Holistic Health Fest, and the Vernon Holistic Health Fest is at the middle school in Vernon, Connecticut, and I will be there.
Wow,
yes,
cool.
And I will try to be there for most of the fair, and I will, if you would like to hear me speak, I will be speaking on Saturday at 2 o'clock p.m., So the Vernon Holistic Health Fest will be Saturday and Sunday, March 25th and 26th, 2017, and it will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And like I said, I'll try to be there most of the time. I will have a table, and the location is the Vernon Center Middle School. It's at 777 Hartford Turnpike, which is also Route 30 in Vernon. So we hope to see you there. Once again, that's at the Vernon Holistic Health Fest, March 25th and 26th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It is at the Vernon Center Middle School, 777 Hartford Turnpike, Route 30, in Vernon, Connecticut. We hope to see you there. There's going to be all kinds of cool stuff there. Like I said, I'll have a table there. I'll be speaking. There'll be many exhibitors. There's 93 tables, lots of vendors. There will be things that you can purchase. There are natural cleaning products, books, gems and minerals, herbal products, all kinds of practitioners, teas and green products. And I won't be the only one speaking. There will be lots of different people speaking. So there are lots of – there's actually 40 hourly workshops and demonstrations in four classrooms.
And it's going to be cold outside, so you should go.
Yeah. And they do this. This is such a big deal that they only do it every 2 years.
Oh, that's interesting.
So 2017 is an on year.
Yeah.
So next year we won't do it.
Wow. So 10 to 4.
Huh. Right. 10 to 4 very both good. Days.
On both days?
Yes.
Are you going to be there both days?
I'm planning to.
Oh, you are?
I am planning to. Are you going to?
I'll be there at least for one of the days, I would imagine, or part of the time.
Yeah.
I can't see any reason why I couldn't be there. That'd
you could be helpful.
Fun. Well, I could be helpful and, I'll just go out and schmooze with people.
Right. I know. We'll give you a stack of business cards and let you walk around.
I am a schmoozer.
You
make
are
sure
a schmoozer.
Make sure you have plenty of cards.
That's right. We will have business cards and we'll just, let you know what's going on in the world. Be a nice thing.
Wow,
okay.
This is a big deal. It's a really big deal.
I'm
all over their website right now. It's very nice.
I know.
It's www.vernonhealthfest.com.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
So, cool.
Okay. And there's food there too. So like if you don't have to bring food with you, if you want to get food, they do have, a cafe where you can get snacks and stuff. So anyway, all right. So anyway, we are, we wanted to talk about some sports stuff. I thought about that. I didn't think I had talked about, sports injuries in a long time or. So I'm interested in pain that is due to playing sports. Now, if you're listening to this and you have pain for other reasons, you may find that the things that I discuss will be helpful to you, even if the injury that you got wasn't because of a sport, but it's some of the same injuries. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is delayed onset muscle soreness, which is really common. And, any of you who have worked out a lot or excessively after not having worked out for a while know what this is. And even so, even if you work out at all, if you put out an extra effort, even if you are trained and fit for the sport that you're doing, you still could get some delayed onset muscle soreness.
It happens.
Oh, I know. And so, like the other day when we did your spin class and we did those hard intervals, we definitely had sore legs afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if the more trained and fit you are, the sooner that will go away and the less likely it is to happen. But you still can get some, the harder effort that you put out. The fact is that whenever you exercise, you are always accessing your muscles and you're always talking to your muscles and using them. So when you use them, there is always some breakdown. In order to put out energy, you have to break down tissue and you have to break down substances. You have to burn something to create energy. You can't have energy without getting it from somewhere. And in fact, the way that you make the energy is by a process of oxidation, which is also one way of thinking of oxidation is burning. If you look inside your cells, inside every cell in your body, you have this thing called the electron transport chain, and it's transferring electrons from molecule to molecule to molecule in the cytochrome P450 system, which is inside your mitochondria. The mitochondria are the energy centers within your cells, very, very important little thingies inside your cells, known as organelles. An organelle is a functional unit that's inside of a cell.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not enough that you have these cells that make up your body, but you have organelles inside your body.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. So you have the nucleus, you have mitochondria.
Right.
You have all kinds of other stuff inside your cells. So these are mitochondria. There was a theory that mitochondria were separate organisms, and they evolved to live inside other organism cells. You know, so like
they were a foreign body. Mm-hmm. They were not of us.
Yep.
Yep. Really?
There's a theory that that's the case. Yes, because
how do you feel about that theory?
It's interesting. If you go inside mitochondria, they're incredible functional units, these teeny tiny things that are inside your cells that create energy. Think about an atom. Think about splitting an atom, right? When you split an atom, atom is held very tightly together. The the protons, neutrons, and electrons, they're held very tightly together. So when you split it, it creates a huge amount of energy because of how tightly it's held together.
Right.
Well, when you got a mitochondria, it's held very tightly together. There's very important molecules inside, and you get a lot of energy out of every mitochondrion.
Hmm.
One mitochondria and two mitochondria.
Oh, that's very nice.
It's true.
Okay. So how do you access that?
How do you access what?
The mitochondria.
Well, you're doing it right now.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, just sitting here talking to you?
Of course. Anytime you use energy, you're using mitochondria.
Okay.
When you're sleeping, you're using mitochondria. As long as you're alive, you're using your mitochondria because your mitochondria are running your electron transport chain.
So it's just a natural thing that happens.
Oh, of course.
As long as you're functioning.
Now, yes. Now, you can increase mitochondrial function. There are things that you can do for that. But anyway, inside your cells are always metabolizing. And like I said, inside the mitochondria, there's this oxidative process that gives you energy. But what happens with the oxidative process is at the greater level, you're using muscle tissue. And muscle tissue, when you use it, you're moving it around and you're creating a lot of circulation. You're bringing heat and circulation to the area, which is going to create swelling. And it can also create pain. That when you have swelling, you can create pain. And those are tumor, rubor, calor, and dolor are the four aspects of inflammation. Tumor being swelling, dolor being pain, rubor being redness, and calor being heat. So you get inflammation every time you use a muscle. So inflammation isn't necessarily a bad thing. Inflammation has to happen in order for you to move. If you walk from here to there, you're creating inflammation in your muscles. It may not be detectable to you, but it is there. And so that's why you have to go to sleep at night. When you go to sleep at night, you do all kinds of repair on those muscles and you reduce inflammation. Sleeping is a great way to reduce inflammation. And in fact, people who have fibromyalgia, who have a really hard time getting out of pain, one of their problems is they don't sleep well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So resting is the way to shore up your muscles. So anyway, you get this thing called delayed onset muscle soreness. So what the heck is going on there? So you go and you do your workout, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and like we said, You can get delayed onset muscle soreness if you do an activity that you're accustomed to. And you can certainly get delayed onset muscle soreness if you're doing an activity that you're not accustomed to.
Okay.
Now loads of you have experienced that, especially in the past couple of weeks, because I'm sure a bunch of you went out and shoveled your walks.
Oh, yeah.
And driveways.
Yeah, you can get that. Yeah.
So, and since I know that only 10% of the U.S. population exercises regularly, and only 5% of the U.S. population exercises enough to make a change in their health, I know that there were many, many people who are out there who don't exercise regularly who were shoveling their driveways, and they had to have gotten some delayed onset muscle soreness. So, if you don't want to get delayed onset muscle soreness, or when you get it, you want to minimize it, what can you do? Well, the first thing is you drink lots of water. If you are well hydrated, you can carry away the products of inflammation more rapidly, and water is a good vehicle for all of the substances that are needed to rebuild the muscle cells. So that's really important. So being hydrated regularly. So in the course of your day, drinking a lot of water. And people always ask me, how much water should I drink in a day? Well, you shouldn't be excessively thirsty all the time. Everybody says, oh, it should be 8 glasses of water a day. And that number is, you know, it's sketchy. Some people can drink 4 to 6 in a day, depending on what they're doing. And some people need a lot more than that. On a day that I'm getting heavy exercise, I'm probably going to be up in the, you know, 8 to 16 range in terms of all the fluid I drink. Mm-hmm. And the fluid that you drink from other sources will be helpful. So if you're getting some fluid in your coffee or in your tea or even in your fizzy water or your soda, that's going to help. And you're getting fluid in the food that you eat. However, if you feel thirsty, you need to be drinking. And you know that saying where they say if you're thirsty, it's already too late? I don't like that. I don't like that sentence.
No.
No, I don't.
Well, it's definitely an indicator.
It's an indicator that you're thirsty. It's not necessarily an indicator that it's too late. Too late for what? I mean, that's a grand assumption that suggests that you should be hyperhydrating and that you should be drinking even when you're not thirsty. That's true to an extent, but I don't entirely agree with that. I mean, if you're not thirsty, pushing fluids isn't necessarily a good thing. And the other thing is, if you're pushing fluids so much that you're constantly in the bathroom, your body's not holding on to it. So if you're going to, if you're urinating a reasonable amount of times, then you're probably holding on to fluids in a reasonable way. But if you're drinking so much fluid that you're in the bathroom every hour, your body's not holding on to it. It's getting rid of a lot of it. So it's not that necessary. So I would say that if you're thirsty, you should drink. I wouldn't say if you're thirsty, it's too late. If you're excessively thirsty, it's probably too late. If you're so thirsty that you can't get it in, that can be an issue. Now, so that means that if you're an athlete or even if you're not, you should be drinking all the time. And the thing is, if you're looking at that glass of water and you feel like you want to drink some of it, it's a good idea to drink some of it. And if you do that, if you have water around all the time, this is something I do recommend. I'm sitting here saying to you, it's not, I don't necessarily agree with if you're thirsty, it's too late. But on the other hand, I do think it's a good idea to have water available to you all the time.
Right.
I mean, I'm sitting here at WHUS. I've got a water bottle on hand.
Right. I always have a bottle near me.
And of course I do, because I'm on the air and, you know, you're talking a lot and you get thirsty.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting with my patients, I absolutely have water with me because, again, I'm constantly talking and my mouth gets dry and I get thirsty. And if I start coughing, which can happen, I can get a piece of dust. I had a situation yesterday in the office. I had 2 patients in a row. I had a gentleman with stinky deodorant, and then I had a woman with some kind of artificial perfume on.
Oh, boy.
And it hit my nose wrong and my throat, and it made me cough and sneeze. It was bad.
Isn't that weird?
I'm so unaccustomed to that.
I am, too, and it's weird because, you know, that I'm real sensitive. Some people just pour it on, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I researched that once, and apparently you get to a point where you can't smell it anymore because you use it so much.
You get habituated,
so you end
yes.
up putting more on and more on and more
right.
on, and it's just, you know, it's offensive to everyone around you.
And in my office,
you can't tell.
And in my office, we try to limit the scented products. I don't wear scents to the office. There's a little bit of scent in my deodorant, a little bit of scent in my hair stuff, but I don't put on extra scents because, you know, you have sensitive patients. And I certainly don't use cologne. I don't even use essential oils, like, you know, essential oils for nice smells on my body, except for what's in my deodorant, which is very mild. Because I'm concerned that people are going to come in and they're going to smell it and they're going to have a problem with it. So you have to be. And so I have patients who come in and they apologize. They just came from the barn or they just came from the pool or they just came from working out and they're, I'm sorry, I stink. And I'm like, no, don't apologize. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder for me to handle artificial scents than it is for whatever, you know, stinky you have going on.
You can deal
so
with
don't worry about
the
that.
Horse and the cow poop.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so getting back to the delayed onset muscle soreness. So so the drinking, you want to be regularly hydrated. Now, before you're ever getting to work out, you want to be hydrating regularly, and then afterwards as well. So through the course of your day, you want to have that water on hand all the time. While you are working out, that depends on how hard you're exercising and what you're doing. If you're doing a gentle walk, you're on the treadmill and you're not working too hard, or you're on the exercise bike and you're not working too hard, you can have a bottle of water there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing intervals and you're working hard, even if it's less, now they say, you know, if you're working out for less than an hour, all you need is plain water. I would say if you're working out for less than an hour and that includes Tabata drills or really hard intervals, I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing really hard intervals inside of an hour, probably want to have something more than water. For me anyway, I don't know, you may feel differently about that, but.
I think we're all different.
I think everybody's different, but my recommendation is if there's any chance you're going to cramp and you know your own body, if there's any chance you're going to cramp, you want to have something else in that bottle besides just water. And that's where you have to figure out what works for you. It could be a little bit of fruit juice and a pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you put that fruit juice and salt in there is because salt and sugar will help you to absorb fluid faster than plain water. So if you need to get that water in fast, a little bit of salt and sugar is a good idea. You also can replenish with minerals. So if there's some potassium as well, potassium and salt in that fluid. And there's going to be potassium in fruit juice. And there's also salt in the salt that you're using. And that will help you to absorb the water faster. And so for myself, I use some natural sport drink that has electrolytes in it. And an electrolyte is simply, electrolytes are minerals that are in your blood, and they're in there to buffer various processes and chemical processes in your blood. They support various chemical processes in your blood. That's what an electrolyte is. And they're also ionic. They give and take electrons, and that's why they're called electrolytes as well. So they're going to be like things like calcium, potassium, magnesium, sodium. They're all electrolytes. Chloride, is also an electrolyte. Nitrates, also electrolytes. And they all give and take electrons to create energy and to support processes in your system. So you may want to have some electrolytes in your fluid. I am a big fan of coconut water when, depending on what I'm doing. So if I'm in just a spin class with a lot of intervals and it's going to be an hour long, I'm not going to have a huge amount of coconut water in that bottle. So I'm not going to have straight coconut water. I'm going to take maybe a quarter cup of coconut water and fill the rest with water with a little bit of sport drink, maybe a quarter teaspoon of sport drink, and that's all I have. If I'm outside and I'm going to get very hot and sweaty and I'm going for a long bike ride, of course, my concentration is going to rise. So you have to titrate it depending on what you're doing. So that's the hydration piece. One of the big ways to reduce delayed onset muscle soreness is to hydrate well before, during, and after your workout. And like I said, plain water is great before and after the workout. Right after the workout, you could do a little bit of carbohydrate in your water bottle. So that could be a little bit of fruit juice. And it could be, you know, healthy sport drink with natural ingredients. And certainly during your workout, you want to be hydrating as well. So that's a really big one. So other things to help delayed onset muscle soreness is to eat well. if you don't have a good diet, you're going to have more delayed onset muscle soreness. So if you're, you know, you thinking, you know, you can eat lots of refined carbohydrates and pastries and too much pizza and not enough vegetables, and that because you're working out so much, and then you're not going to get delayed onset muscle soreness, that's not going to happen. You really do need to eat well. And by well, what do I mean? Well, you need to eat adequate protein, whether you're a vegetarian or not. If you're a vegetarian, then you're looking at, so if you're vegan, you're looking at protein from beans and nuts and seeds, possibly soy products if you tolerate them. And you're going to get some protein from other things, from your vegetables as well, but not a lot, but you will get concentrated protein in beans and nuts and seeds. If you're not a vegetarian, of course, then you're looking at clean animal protein. And protein, whether it's animal or vegetable, is really important to help to rebuild your muscles, because when you're exercising, you're using your muscles. Your muscles are sore because they're rebuilding themselves. That's what they're doing. And so in order to rebuild, they're made of protein. And so in order for them to rebuild, you have to have protein. You need protein to rebuild the muscle tissue, the muscle cells, and you need to rebuild the collagen. The other thing that's happening, you have to remember, is that your muscles, when you work out, your muscles are being damaged. And because they're being damaged, that doesn't mean you shouldn't work out. It means that your muscles are going to what's called, they're going to experience hyperplasia and hypertrophy. So hyperplasia is an increase in the number of cells in the muscle, and hypertrophy is simply growth. The muscle's going to be bigger than it was before you exercised. So the more you exercise, the more likely you are to have growth of the muscles. And depending on what kind of exercise you're doing, your muscles are going to shape out differently. We all know, I don't know if we all know this, but if you look at a marathon runner versus a sprinter, they look very different. So that's a huge example. It's an excellent example of how the kind of exercise you do will shape your muscles. Because marathon runners, or distance runners anyway, are doing very long bouts of cardio exercise. They are in net catabolism. What that means is they're breaking down tissue all the time. So the kind of effort they're doing, they're going to get very long, lean muscles, and they're going to get some muscle breakdown. So for them, it's really important to rebuild with carbohydrate, and also to rebuild with protein. Because you actually lose muscle tissue when you do long cardio, because your body, when you're pushing your body to do lots of long cardio, your body is going to look for whatever it can find to break down so it can keep you going. It's going to go for sugar first. If there's sugar in your blood, it's going to go for that first. And it's going to go for your glycogen stores next, which are the a storage form of sugar that's in your liver. It's going to chew through those. And then if you can train your body to go into your fat stores, then it's going to go, you hope it's going to go into your fat stores. And you don't want it to go into the proteins in your body, the muscle tissue in your body, and create gluconeogenesis. But your body will do that too. And when you're exercising, you can't help but have some gluconeogenesis. So once again, gluconeogenesis is a word that's used. Listen to the word glucose. It's your body is making new glucose. Neo is new. Glucose, genesis, and creating it. It's creating new glucose, and it's used to refer to when you're making that glucose from protein. And gluconeogenesis is not a great thing. You want, that's a thing that whatever exercise you're doing, you want to minimize that. And how you minimize that, if you're doing long cardio, you really can't avoid it to some extent. You're not going to burn entirely fat or sugar while you're exercising. You are going to burn some muscle tissue. And that's why you have to replenish with protein. And then when you're resting, your body to some extent is going to rebuild. But if you're doing lots of long cardio, there's really only so much you can rebuild, which is why it's important to do resistance training. And even if you're a runner, it's good to do some kind of resistance training. Of course, if you're a runner and you don't want to bulk up, you have to, you know, do a kind of resistance training that's going to support you. So you're going to be doing light weights and low reps.
Right.
Or bar class.
You and your bar class.
Bar class is fantastic.
I know.
It's really terrific.
I keep hearing this.
Oh, my goodness. It's so amazing. I think it's good for runners.
Maybe 3 or 4 times a day, I guess.
Yeah, bar class is awesome. I haven't done bar class in way too long.
You're hooked.
They're going to have bar class at the Mansfield Community Center. Can't wait.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know, right? So anyway, so the other piece is that if you're going to build muscle, of course, if you do sprinting and if you do resistance training, you're going to build muscle and you'll have a level of net muscle growth. And of course, eating that protein is going to help you, and hydrating well. And all of those things, once again, can cause that delayed onset muscle soreness. But you do have more muscle growth when you do cardio exercises that are short and include sprints, and also when you do direct resistance training of any kind. That the goal is to grow muscle tissue. And so in order to do that, you absolutely have to eat protein. You also have to eat your veggies and your fruit, because they're going to give you all kinds of nutrients. They're going to give you B vitamins. They're going to give you electrolytes, and they're going to give you antioxidants. So that's going to help to dampen excessive levels of inflammation. So eating a healthy diet that has antioxidants in it and has nutrients for you to rebuild yourself is super important. There are supplements that can be helpful too. I have to emphasize this, you know, of course, as naturopathic physicians, we're in the position of, doing supplements. We offer nutritional supplements, but nutritional supplements are just that. They are supplements. They are not the main thing that you should be doing. And I try to emphasize that less is more, and that having a healthy lifestyle, getting your rest, getting outside, getting your exercise, and eating a healthy diet are all more important than whatever supplement you take. However, if you're pushing your body very hard, there are some supplements that can help. One of my favorites is magnesium, because you do deplete your magnesium when you're exercising very hard or when you're exercising regularly. And magnesium is an extremely important mineral, and you deplete your magnesium when you're working out. So magnesium is great because it helps you to feel calmer. It calms your nerves, and it also calms your muscles, and it makes them less likely to spasm, and it makes them less likely to cramp. So if you're magnesium sufficient, you're going to have less problems with muscle cramping, and you're going to be calmer emotionally as well. But if you're a cramper, you may be low in magnesium. And I see all too often that people don't eat enough magnesium in their diets. And the best place to get magnesium from is green stuff. And no, I'm not talking about green M&Ms or green gummy bears. I am talking about leafy green vegetables. So your veggies, any of your veggies, if you're eating the green parts, especially the leaves are on the plant to do photosynthesis. They're full of chlorophyll. And chlorophyll has a ring structure. It has a heme ring, just like hemoglobin in your body. And just like hemoglobin in your body, it is an oxygen producer. It helps to metabolize oxygen for the plant. So magnesium and hemoglobin are basically the same compound, except that magnesium has chlorophyll has magnesium at the middle of it, and hemoglobin has iron in the middle of it. And one's is green and one's is red. Put them together, you get Merry Christmas. What can I say? But anyway, they're very, very similar. And they help with cellular respiration in plants, the chlorophyll. And people, mammals, the hemoglobin. Really important stuff. You also have a compound in your muscles called myoglobin, which is similar, also has iron at the middle of it and supplies oxygen to the muscles. Important stuff. Yeah. So those are things. What I was saying is that if you eat a lot of green vegetables and you have a lot of magnesium on board, you'll get more magnesium in if you eat your greens. You come to the naturopath, you get told to eat your veggies. Surprise.
And some of us even take extra magnesium.
I said that.
Yeah.
I know. I told them that already.
I was on the phone.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. Anyway, so the other thing is essential fats. If you can take two supplements, the two big supplements I love to tell athletes and people who work out a lot, magnesium, fish oil.
Yep.
You can go out and get all kinds of fancy stuff. You can get your fancy designer proteins, and you can get your branched chain amino acids, and you can get your this and that. Anyway, magnesium and fish oil, number one and number two. I don't know which is which. So fish oil, why fish oil? Because, again, so magnesium is a super important mineral that many people are depleted in anyway because they don't eat their veggies. And then fish oil is another one. People don't get their essential fatty acids. If you're eating the standard North American diet, you're probably not getting your essential fatty acids either. So essential fatty acids are found in things like fish. It's found in animals, whether it's poultry or pork or beef, if they have been raised right. So if you're eating grass-fed beef, the grass-fed beef is going to have good essential fatty acids in it. If you're eating corn-fed beef, not so much. It's going to have inflammatory linoleic acid in it. So grass-fed beef, free-range poultry is also going to have great essential fatty acids. Why? Because the free-range poultry is going to be running around. The chickens and the turkeys are going to be scratching for bugs. They're going to get essential fatty acids from the bugs and also from eating the leafy greens. So grass-fed and plant-fed, and I'm not talking corn, I'm talking running around and foraging, birds and mammals are going to be healthier, and they're going to have good essential fatty acids on board first. Not only are you going to get your protein, you're going to get your essential fatty acids. And of course, there's your fish. Fish are really high in essential fatty acids. And that's why we extract the fish oil from the fish, so you get the concentrated essential fatty acids. They are super important because they can help to reduce inflammation in your body, and because you're creating inflammation in your body. And you're also helping to rebuild every cell in your body. Every cell in your body, the cell membrane, has essential fatty acids in it. So if you take extra essential fatty acids, you will speed the reduction of inflammation and the reduction of pain, and you will help to rebuild your cells. So those are really important things. So there are other nutrients that can help along. And I did mention branched chain amino acids, and those can be helpful. That's something you can put in your protein shake. They taste god-awful. But the branched chain amino acids, valine, leucine, and isoleucine, are three amino acids that can help to build muscle tissue faster. So if you are either you're doing resistance training, you're doing sprints, or you're even if you're going out and doing long cardio, you're doing, 60-mile bike rides, or you're training for half marathons and marathons, you can do branched chain amino acids to help rebuild your muscles. Those can be helpful. And protein powders. So, eating protein within half an hour of your workout is a great time to do it because your body is primed for rebuilding. So doing that protein right away can be really good. If you digest and absorb well, that protein can be a burger. It can be chicken. It can be peanut butter. It can be, nuts and seeds. It can be beans. If you can digest and absorb that quickly, I will say this is one of those situations where the supplements can be really helpful. And the fastest absorbed and most bioavailable protein powder you can get is whey protein. The ideal whey protein is going to be cold processed and from grass-fed cows. So whey protein can be problematic. If you're a person that's allergic to dairy protein, it can be problematic. But if you're not, if you don't react to dairy protein, it's the best one. It quite honestly is the best one of all the protein powders you can get out there. Also, it can tend to be less expensive than some of the others because whey is a byproduct of cheese production.
Right. And this is from the milk of the very large animal that you sometimes talk about us not
needing necessarily.
Right.
Yes.
That's
however, I mean, if you just rode your bike 60 miles and you broke down a lot of muscle tissue and you're in that sweet spot half hour right after you're done your ride, and you consume some whey protein and you're not allergic to it, you're going to absorb it and your body's going to take it in rather rapidly, and it's going to help to begin the process of rebuilding your muscle tissue. Now, if you're a lucky person like Ron and you can digest and absorb almost anything, even when you're on your bike, you can do that cool thing where you take your water bottle and you put a concentration of 4-to-1 carbohydrate to protein. I tried that. I can't do it.
Oh, no. God. It's great.
Yeah, you can do it.
So much better.
Well, you can do
yeah.
it because you can digest and metabolize rather rapidly. If I do that, I put protein in my stomach while I'm riding on the bicycle and trying to climb a hill. My stomach goes, what do you want me to do with this? You're talking, if I eat my dinner too late, the dinner's still in my stomach the next morning. And I don't know if I have delayed gastric emptying or what, but I certainly don't have a stomach that can do what your stomach can do. So I have to eat little bits of stuff, a little at a time, and my fluid can't be too concentrated. It does have to have some carbohydrate in it, but it, if it has any protein, it has to be a tiny bit, and usually no, because I'm just going to sit there and it's going to go through me and I'm going to have gas and it won't be good. So I have to do my protein off the bike, and especially after. In fact, I have to do most of my nutrition off the bike. I mean, I can take a little bit of nutrition in between, and it has to be pretty carby because I don't absorb that great while I'm exercising. And, you know, this is one of those instances that you see where everybody is different and people have different metabolisms, and you have to experiment with how to nourish yourself. But doing that protein, I am able, if I'm done with the exercise, I can do that protein within that sweet spot of half an hour. And I do tolerate the whey protein. And whey protein, of all the protein powders, in my opinion, it tastes really good.
Mm.
Having said that, I had a nice woman come in to me the other day, a lovely woman who I've been seeing for many years, and she's a weightlifter. She got bone broth protein. You know how bone broth is all the rage?
Yeah.
She got bone broth protein.
Really?
Bone broth protein powder.
Wow.
And I'm like, how's it taste? She says it's delicious.
Huh.
And it comes in flavors, you know, all the good flavors you might like that you think of your whey protein powder coming in. Comes in chocolate and strawberry and peanut butter and banana and whatever. And she says, I got the banana cream. I loved it. So apparently the bone broth powder doesn't have a particular taste, and you can flavor with your yummy sweet flavors and taste good. And so if bone broth powder would be another one that I would say would be very absorbable. The other cool thing about it is it would tend to be hypoallergenic, whereas whey protein, not necessarily, because, again, you're consuming the dairy of another species after the age of weaning, and that can be a problem. But the bone broth protein is going to be very hypoallergenic. You can also get just beef protein as a protein powder. It tends to be pricey. But again, the cool thing about protein powders that are made from animals is they're wicked hypoallergenic. You're going to tend to react to plants sooner than you're going to react to animals, because animals are more like us. That's the way it is.
Huh.
Having said that, if you're listening to me going, but Fran, I'm a vegan. I'm not doing this whey thing. I'm
right.
not doing this bone
Can't
broth
do the bone
thing.
Broth either. Right.
So we got you. We got your back. So the other things to think about are rice protein. So you figure out which one works for you, which one you tolerate, which one you like the taste of, because they taste different. Rice protein. Now, me, Fran, I go back and forth between whey protein and yellow pea protein. I think I have sluggish kidneys because I look at my glomerular filtration rate. That is the rate at which my kidneys filter stuff. And it's a little lower than I would like. I see people who are older than me and they have higher glomerular filtration rates. I mean, I'm not in kidney failure, but, you know, my kidneys, if I don't drink enough, my GFR is in the low, it's in the double digits already, which is like, I don't know, that's such a great thing. The neat thing about yellow pea protein is that yellow pea protein promotes kidney function. So that's why I go back and forth between yellow pea protein and whey protein, because the whey protein is, like I said, it's super absorbable. I don't react to it. And the other cool thing about whey protein is that whey protein has immune globulins in it and glutamine. It has its own immune globulins and glutamine in it. One of the things, if you're doing a lot of cardio exercise, is that you're going to be more likely to get sick, because you're using your adrenal hormones to power the exercise, and your adrenal hormones might not be as available to protect you from illnesses. So when you consume whey protein has immune globulins in it, and those immune globulins, you'll get some extra support from them, and they'll help to protect you from illness, as well as the glutamine. And glutamine is something that can shore up your digestive system, and it helps to keep those tight junctions in the small intestine tight so that you're not absorbing stuff that you're not supposed to be. So it's also going to help protect you and keep your probiotics where you need them, the probiotics, which are also going to help your immune system. And glutamine also supports the white blood cells and makes them stronger so that they can fight illness more readily. So glutamine is something I encourage people to add to their protein shakes at the end of a long workout, because glutamine enhances protein absorption. It enhances the absorption of all sorts of stuff because it shores up the strength of the small intestine. And it also directly works with the white blood cells to protect you from illness, especially respiratory illness, which if you're a a long cardio person, you're more prone to that because of how much you're using the your adrenals. So that's a nutrition thing, and that's how to help you with delayed onset muscle soreness. All of those things are going to be helpful. You know, you can get delayed. There's another interesting way you can get delayed onset muscle soreness that's not exercise. What's that? It's going to the chiropractor. So you go get a chiropractic adjustment, and then the next day you might be sore. And that's not because the chiropractor hurt you. It's because the chiropractor readjusted some things and aligned you in such a way that now the your ligaments are realigned, but your muscles have to follow. So there could be some inflammation that has to settle down. And it's not a bad thing, and it'll go away in about a day. But don't, if that happens to you, you go to the chiropractor and you're sore for a day afterwards, it's okay. That's something that happens. And again, you can help that with extra magnesium, drinking lots of water if you want. And the other thing is anti-inflammatory herbs. So let's talk about curcumin and boswellia, which are two great anti-inflammatory herbs for muscles. Now, should you have them while you're working out? While you're actually working out, you know what? Maybe not. Why would that be? Because you want the inflammatory process to occur while you're working out because you want to be able to build your muscles. So do you want to have curcumin, you know, turmeric and ginger and boswellia or frankincense in your diet and in your supplements away from your workouts? Yeah, you do, because you're going to have less soreness and you're going to recover from your workouts faster if you do that. And curcumin, of course, has all kinds of wonderful health benefits, including helping to protect you from cancer, helping your liver to work better, helping you to protect you from dementia. It's got so many other health benefits. So curcumin is definitely your friend, but you might not want it in your water bottle. Okay, so that's delayed onset muscle soreness. So now here's a list of really common, there's the 7 most common sports injuries. Want to hear them?
There's a bunch. Go. Yeah.
Ankle sprain, groin pull, hamstring sprain.
Done that, done that,
shin
done that.
Splints.
Done that.
Knee injury, ACL tear.
Probably have done that.
Knee injury. Well, we think you have a medial. So we're going to say ACL tear, but that the most common one is the ACL, but any of the ligaments can get strained. The collaterals, you have a medial collateral problem, right?
Yeah, MCL, yeah. Right.
Yes, so there's medial collateral and there's lateral collateral, and then there's the ACL and there's the PCL. ACL is anterior cruciate ligament because it crosses in the front of your knee, and then there's the PCL, the posterior cruciate ligament, which crosses at the back of your knee. And then the collaterals are the ligaments that hold your knee together on the sides. You also have the patellofemoral tendon. So your patella is your kneecap.
And that's on the list, my list over here.
Patellofemoral syndrome. Mm-hmm. Been there, done that. Yep, that's a thing that happens to me.
Yeah. And then you get kind of a funny feeling underneath your kneecap, right? You get kind of a sharp pain under your kneecap.
Under your kneecap or around your kneecap or alongside your kneecap. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so you can have a tracking problem.
And you can get it from basketball, cycling, swimming, football, volleyball, and running.
Oh, I can tell you that you can get it from cycling. No question there.
Yeah.
The other thing you can get is epicondylitis. So they have there's tennis elbow and then there's golfer's elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget which side is. Can you do that for me? Find out which, because there's tennis elbow and golfer's elbow. Mm. And one is on the lateral side and one is on the medial side. And I was getting messed up.
Okay.
And I had one of them. I think I had golfer's elbow. And I think it's lateral, but I'm not sure. So I think I've had something to do. I've had groin, but I maybe had a groin pull once. Hamstring strain. I have a trick right hamstring. So that is definitely a thing for me. If I run too fast, too far, too hard, I pull my hamstring. I don't tend to pull my hamstring on the bike. I tend to pull it running. Shin splints are not a thing I get because I don't run very much. The ACL, I think my ACL is okay because I don't do a lot of activity with torquing in it. So knock on wood, I'm good there. Patellofemoral syndrome. Oh, yeah. That's a thing I get. I definitely have tracking issues because I have weird-shaped knees and I track weird. And then I've had the epicondylitis, but I don't get the epicondylitis from riding. I got the epicondylitis from weightlifting. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got that. I was doing upright rows, and I was accustomed to doing 15 pounds, and I went from 15 pounds to 20 pounds.
That's a big jump.
Too big of a jump.
That's
right?
A very big jump.
It's 5 pounds is too much. So
yes,
really,
it is.
So unfortunately, the gym I was at did not have 17 and a half pound weights.
Right. Or maybe you should have, you know, done a few less.
I could have done a few less. Or the other thing to do would have been to head over to the a machine.
Right.
Or do... Yeah, if I wanted to do 17 and a half pounds, I should have figured out a way to do it. I could have absolutely have done it on one of the machines instead of, you know, using free weights. I like to use free weights because you access your stabilizer muscles.
Mm. But well, free weights are better in general.
It
will help you maintain your balance better.
And yet there's some
cool
stuff.
Hold your form better, too.
It's true. And right. Having said that, there's some cool things you can do with machines that,
right.
that are harder to do with free weights.
But they very much isolate. The machines do.
Yeah,
so.
They do. But it would have been better for me to do those upright rows on a machine than to do the 5 pound jump with the free weights. Okay, go ahead. Say what
so I say. I have your answer here.
Oh.
Tennis elbow affects the lateral or outside.
Ah.
Ah. And golfer's elbow affects the medial or inside.
I'm pretty sure I had a medial epicondylitis, and I had golfer's elbow. I was going around saying, I have golfer's elbow.
That's the difference.
Yeah. So golfers, how am I going to remember this? So tennis lateral and golfer medial. How in the heck am I going to remember this? Tennis lateral. Yeah.
Lateral this way. I'm making motions here that no one can see on the radio.
Because like
if you look at a tennis as a, you know, you're going to swing from the back and pull it across the front of your body as you're swinging.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you look at golf where you're going to be swinging from below.
Okay.
I
got something for you.
Yeah.
Your tennis racket. Looks like it has a little ladder in it that you can climb up.
Okay.
So the ladder in the racket. Or you could be swinging your golf club in the mud.
Okay.
So the mud is medial.
Okay.
It's kind of like trying to remember where the mitral valve is in your heart.
Whatever works for you.
Yeah.
I would have to probably
like
just
like
look
that.
It up.
Dr. Tittrett said the bishop with his mitred hat is never right.
Okay. And there's a meaning to this.
Yes. It was a very... silly. I still remember. It was so bizarre that I remember it to this day. May he rest in peace, Dr. Tittrett. He was my anatomy professor at National College of Naturopathic Medicine, which is now the National University of Natural Medicine. Anyway, bishop with his mitered hat is never right. What it means is the mitral valve is never right. It's on the left-hand side of your heart.
Okay.
So that's how you remember. So anyway, all of these other things, you have ankle sprain, groin pull, hamstring strain, shin splints, the knee injuries. And so all of those things can help to prevent them by doing stabilization exercises. So for the ankle, what you want to do is balancing exercises can really help. So doing stabilization where simply standing on one leg, alternating, that can help. Doing any yoga poses where you have to stand on one leg, that's going to be your tree pose, your warrior three, your balancing half moon, anything where you're standing on one leg. You don't even have to call the yoga pose. Just stand on one leg and hold your other leg in various places, you know, with your knee up, with your leg out, it doesn't matter. Standing on one leg will help. One-legged squats, yikes, that's a great way to help to stabilize your ankle. Another thing is bird dips, one-legged deadlifts. So that's where you look like that dunking bird. You go down, you hold some light weights in your hands or no weight at all, and you practice dunking down, and that will help to stabilize your legs, your ankles. So that's a good one for the ankles. That's also a good one for stabilizing the knees, to stabilize all of the ligaments in the knees. For stabilizing the knees, I really like the leg lifts where you sit with your back against a wall or the bed, or just a very stable piece of furniture or the wall, and then you lift your leg a few inches off the ground. It doesn't actually matter that much how many inches, just so you can, as long as you can hold it. And then you isometrically squeeze your muscles and you hold. And hold for about 6 seconds and you do a bunch of sets of those. So those leg lifts and hold, isometric holds can be really helpful for stabilizing the knees. And that can help with your ACL. That can help with your patellofemoral syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
I found that just standing on one leg.
Yes, like I said, anything you do like, that's standing on one leg.
Like a stork, not a storch.
Uh-huh, or like a storch.
Well, like a storch.
Yeah. That, but any of those, because tree pose and yoga, anything mm-hmm. where you're standing on one leg is that's really good for both your knees and your ligaments. The hamstrings, so the hamstrings are tough. So the way I tend to pull my hamstrings is by going too fast, too far, too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, doctor, when I do this, it hurts. So don't do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
With running, if you're not accustomed to running, you have to train in small increments. You can't be – one of the things we have happen to us as cyclists is that we have a lot of fitness, and then we go out and we try to run, and we've got the fitness to go out and run 5 miles. What we don't have is our legs are not seasoned.
No, not at all.
Right. So you have to – you don't have the musculature, and you don't have the ligaments are not
right.
seasoned, and they're not ready to support you in that activity. So the problem is you feel like you can do it because you can.
Sure.
You can physically do it, but your ligaments and your tendons are not ready for it.
You have
so
the,
you go
you have
and
the
you
cardio,
pull stuff.
But you, and you have the muscle.
Yes.
But you don't have the actual
the ligaments are not stretched enough. They're not mm-hmm. They're not positioned correctly, and they're not stretched, and they're not strong enough to handle it. So that's how I tend to pull my hamstrings when I run too far, too hard, too fast. So if you're new to running, it's a very good idea to combine walking and running and increase your distance and your speed in very small increments, even if you feel like you can go farther. Don't do it.
Right.
Don't do it. That's how you pull your hamstring.
Because hamstrings take a very long time to heal.
Oh, yes, they do. And I find for myself, I'm fortunate in that when I pull my hamstring, I can still ride my bike. The place that I'm pulling it, I'm able to still ride and I'm still able to still
right.
get in the pool. Running, uh-uh. As long as that hamstring is pulled, cannot run.
Well, here it says often between 6 and 12 months because walking causes a lot of stress to an injured hamstring. So
yep.
if you're, and that's how you get around, you walk.
Right.
So you're always going back at it.
So one of the things I wanted to say for all these common sports injuries, mm-hmm. all of the things we said before, the curcumin, the boswellia, and the fish oil, magnesium, all help with these things.
Mm-hmm.
So those can all be really helpful. Bromelain is another one. Bromelain is a pineapple enzyme, and it's a proteolytic enzyme that can help. And also plant enzymes that break down proteins because inflammatory compounds have protein in them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I should mention in there, you know, if you're one of those people who takes an ibuprofen before you go running.
Oh, we talked about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so good.
Not a wonderful idea.
Not
it
so good.
It does take away your pain, but it downregulates some of your inflammatory pathways. So it tends to downregulate your cyclooxygenase while upregulating your lipoxygenase. So just hear me out there, two different parts of your inflammatory system. So it increases one of the parts of your inflammatory system. So in the long run, if you do non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen, like naproxen, like aspirin regularly, number one, you can cause gastrointestinal bleeds. And number two is you can cause joint degeneration. So
a wise woman once told me that pain was the way of your body telling you that something's not right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So the other thing we like to tell you about is tape. We are big fans of athletic tape, for KT tape and other kinds of athletic tape.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. I like them better than braces because you can move with them on and they're tremendous. They really, and we still haven't taped my rib. Silly, yes.
You just have to ask.
I have to do it. So it's really tremendous. So when I had the medial epicondylitis from the weightlifting, we taped my arm and he put the tape on me and I mean, it feels better almost right away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not all better right away, but it feels, it helps so fast. And it's just tape. And you can move with it. You can take a shower with it.
Yeah,
it
I'm
does
a big
tend
believer.
To peel off after like 5 days. So mm-hmm. then that's when you replace it. But wherever you have the pain, if you have it on your rib, if you have it on your ankle, your knees, fit tremendous for knees. When I get my patellofemoral tracking system, oh my goodness, it's incredible. The tape, we do the tape for the knees.
It works.
It's really, really helpful. All right, so these are all things that can be helpful for sports injuries, various exercises, drinking your water, eating good, all that kind of stuff, and getting your rest. Don't forget that rest is when you make the most gains in your fitness and strength. So make sure to rest, get your good sleep, and take days off and take easy days in your exercise.
Easy days are good.
You've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, and you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. We hope maybe we'll see you this weekend on Saturday and Sunday, March 25th and 26th, at the Vernon Holistic Health Fest at the Vernon Center Middle School, 777 Hartford Turnpike, Route 30 in Vernon, Connecticut. I will be speaking on Saturday at 2 o'clock p.m., and there will be many other workshops and tables and a lot of things to enjoy. So we hope we'll see you there. And otherwise, we will see you next week here on Radio Naturopath at WHUS 91.7 FM.